it was a process, and as you know, it takes some time to really, you know, figure out who it is that you are and what you're going to be about. But I came into it with some pretty clear ideas. And so just for just a little color with that, I took over a team that was really struggling, hadn't had a winning season in its history, actually, its Division I history. I think 26 years without a winning season, and not really a good job on any measure, really. And so what I did before I took the job, actually before I stepped foot on campus, is I really just sat down and went through a process of over, you know, 3-4 days a week, where I outlined on paper, I had like a legal yellow pad of paper, every single thing that I want our program to accomplish when I'm the head coach there. It was just kind of a dream building, visioning process where I wrote out every single thing. I wanted to win championships, and not just one, and not just once in a while. And I wanted to do it with incredible guys who were role models on our campus and our community, and the kind of people that I want to hang out with and I want my children to look up to. And all of the things, you know, every detail of it, I kind of planned it out as best that I could. And then I went through this process of every single day going to work at Valparaiso, where honestly, I would wake up every single morning and I would look at that yellow pad of paper and just read through it and make notes on it. And just every single day, remind myself of this is what we're trying to do. This is what we're trying to be. And then all I had to do in my day to day and my job was just kind of act like the team, the coach of the team that we're trying to become. That was all I was trying to do, was just make a real clear picture in my head of what it was that we're trying to be, and then just act like that. And I would tell the players all the time that it kind of gave me a roadmap in some ways, because as you come across all these different decisions, hundreds of decisions that you make as the coach of the program, the head coach of the team, do I go recruit this guy? Well, does he fit into this picture of what we're trying to be? And the answer is yes, then yeah, I'll go recruit him. And if the answer is no, then also no, I won't recruit him. Do I go speak at this event? Do I cut this kid? Do I bring this guy in for a talk about his app? Every decision, all I had to do was look at the yellow pad of paper and say, does it fit in here? And then if it was a yes, it was a yes. If it was a no, it was a no.
You were just listening to Mike Avery, the former head college soccer coach at Valparaiso University and now the head coach of Fort Wayne FC in Indiana. And he was describing what the process looked like for him of determining his own coaching philosophy and the program identity he wanted to create at Valparaiso years ago. And what he lands on isn't just something that's aspirational, but it becomes instructional. Now, today's episode on creating a program identity is the second part of a very special three-part series we're doing for the Coaching Culture Podcast. Now, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. I'm JP Nerman. I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson. Also, we've got guests, many of whom you will remember from previous podcasts. Mike Avery of Fort Wayne FC. He was on episode 133. Will Ray of Northridge Prep, episodes 100 and 101. Boomer Roberts from Purdue Northwest, episodes 135 and 36. And TJ Rosine, Emmanuel College and PGC Basketball, who will hopefully be on the podcast later this year. Now, this podcast, it's about helping leaders become more transformational and build better cultures. Simple as that. If you enjoy the podcast, the good news is this. I don't just do podcasts. I've got a website, thriveonchallenge.com, with free articles, a free newsletter that shares podcast coaching notes for every episode. Also on the website, you can learn about our community of coaches, our mentorship program, and our retreats. So let's get into today's episode. Nate, we've never had so many guests on the podcast. This was your idea. What inspired you to not only bring on four coaches, but these four coaches?
Well, JP, as we mentioned last week in the first part of the series, as you and I have discovered, it is rare to find a program and it's rare to find a coach who has invested, in the case of our guest this week, the majority of their career in developing a strong identity that permeates the entirety of their program, whether that's at the collegiate level or the high school level. It's incredibly unique. And so as I was thinking about coaches who might be listening to this and thinking, I just need more examples. I need to have a little more tangible feel for, you know, what does it mean to have an identity that touches every part of the program? I started thinking about people we could bring on board or bring into this conversation. And we have a number of friends of the podcast that have our former guests and coaches that we talk to all the time that were willing to come and share a little bit of their experience. And so with Boomer Roberts and Will Ray and Mike Avery and TJ Rosine, you know, you've got over 100 years of coaching experience and some of the guys that are the best in the business at really developing a strong program identity. And so what we're going to start our conversation with today is just having a couple of these coaches describe what is the defining identity or characteristics of the program that they have built. And we're going to start with our friend Boomer Roberts talking about love, joy, and toughness at Purdue Northwest.
We kind of have two slogans that we use, and they're not just for social media or anything like that. They're something that we talk about every single day. The first is love, joy, and toughness. And I got that a little bit from when I was an assistant at Vanguard University, and we won the NAI Division I National Championship in 2014. I was fortunate enough to get a head job soon after that at Trinity International. And going into that, I was looking back on our Vanguard teams and we kind of took that from the bottom to the top. And I was like, why? You know, it was an examination of why did this happen? And I, after studying and talking to our guys and diving into my boss and stuff, we really discovered that it was because we loved each other more. We really, like, tangibly, you could see how much each guy loved each other. They love competing. They love basketball. They had great joy every single day, no matter what they were doing. It was evident. You could feel it in the room. And then I thought we were physically and mentally tougher than almost everybody we played on a given night. So if you can surround yourself, and it fits me, right? Like, I want to love people well. I got the nickname Boomer because I was so joyful when I was a young kid, and my kids are kind of showing that now, and I'm understanding that a little bit more as a dad. Toughness, I'm not sure I am, but I strive to be. So it fit me, and we really ran with it. And then in the fight is something that we developed after a couple of years after I became a head coach. And I was really looking at, well, what separates us from these other programs? Because so many of these coaches are better coaches than I am. They've done it longer. They've won more games. They know more people. They may have more resources than we do. So what can separate us? And for us, it was because we're a younger staff, because we rock with our guys, for lack of a better term, we can do some of the things that they can do. So we're going to lift with you. We're going to run suicides with you. We're going to run 17s with you. We're going to do 20 and 20s with you. You know, we're going to get out there on the practice floor and show you, you know, we still a little bit play with our guys, especially my assistants, and I get out there every once in a while. We're not as strong. We're not as fast. But it isn't about that, because it's more about the sweat equity. And they know that anything that we're asking them to do, we will do. So we are completely 100% in the fight with each other. And if you have love, joy, and toughness in everything you do, and you fight together, well, then the results take care of itself. And we've seen that in a couple different programs now.
Now, we posed the same question to Will Ray, who's been the head boys basketball coach at Northridge Prep in the Chicago area for the past 17 years. And as you'll hear from Will, the defining characteristic of what they've built there at Northridge is a culture based on the identity of being others-centered.
I mean, this is my 17th, I just completed my 17th year at Northridge. So we certainly have had an opportunity to really establish a solid foundation. And I think the way I would describe our identity is that we're a program that's focused on helping others, right? Helping teammates, helping, you know, the younger guys in the program. Just this whole notion of being an others centered program is probably the overarching theme, that we're not, you know, concerned with individual accomplishments, although we do celebrate some of those at the end of a season, for example. But all of that is in the context of of what's best for, you know, the players, you know, sitting next to me or the players that I that I'm playing with, and just this notion of having appreciation for the skills and gifts other players bring to the table, you know, having this this notion of giving of self to help make others better is I guess I would say the overriding identity of our program. And then, you know, within that, of course, there are many different layers and aspects to it. You know, but in establishing our identity, I really started out with kind of a coach-directed approach initially my first couple of years, but that's really morphed now into more of a joint venture, right, where we're, you know, continuing to develop our identity together. You know, many of the customs and traditions and standards that we have in our program, many of those have come as a result of things that our players have brought to my attention or things that they've established that I felt were really good for our identity. So anyway, that's how I would try and describe what our program is about. It's about having a great experience in the act of giving yourself to those around you.
Now, a third voice we want to bring into this conversation is that of TJ Rosine from Point Guard College. And TJ has been the head men's basketball coach at Emmanuel College for about the last 20 years. And during that time has been very intentional about building a program identity. But what's interesting about TJ's story is that it's really evolved over time and now is kind of boiled down to two words, attitude and gratitude.
Well, you know, I think that what we have is a special identity and culture, and I really feel like it is one of the things that helps us to separate our program and helps us to achieve things we couldn't achieve without it. And, you know, I think we're a blend. You and I have talked about this before. I think we're a little bit of a blend between, you know, coach slash program led and player led. And here's where I think that, you know, that mixture happens is, you know, I think in general, there's a certain identity we want to have, but we also need each group to create their own identity. And so I think one of the mistakes that we can or have made is, you know, expecting the next group to have an identical or better identity than the next group. And so I don't think it works out that way, but they can have some common core values. They can have some common things in one identity and the next identity. But the way I describe our identity is kind of the two words overarching has been gratitude and attitude. And, you know, we've kind of come to grips with those being who we are. Now that looks different with every team, but every team is going to operate with a high level of gratitude and hopefully a high level of attitude as well.
Where did those two values or those two words come from? Was that something that you just brought in and said, this is who I think we want to be? Or is it something that's kind of evolved over time?
Yeah, it has evolved over time. And, you know, let me tell you why we landed on two words is because I think like a lot of people, we spend a lot of time, maybe not a lot of people actually spend time doing this, I don't know, but we spend a good amount of time trying to come up with our pillars. And I've talked to a lot of different coaches that have 12 pillars or 8 pillars or 4 pillars, whatever. And what we found out is that it was much easier for it to stick with our players when it was simple, sound, and solid. I go back to this all the time, but Don Meyer, probably he has several favorite quotes that I have, but simple, sound, and solid has always been one of them. And I want us to be simple, sound, and solid. And I thought that was just on the court, but really that's in everything that we do. And so gratitude and attitude is really simple. It's really sound and it's really solid and it sticks and we can build out from there. Now, gratitude means a lot of things. Like there's a lot of pillars that might come under gratitude. There's a lot of pillars that might come under attitude and we want players to know those, but it might change from team to team. Like what are those pillars under gratitude? What are those pillars under attitude? But it really gives us a narrowness of focus when we keep it simple and sound and solid like that with just two words, gratitude and attitude. And that kind of evolved over time from something big that was almost too big for everybody to stick with to something that's kind of narrowed down its focus.
So Nate, one of the things I absolutely love about the fact that we have so many different coaches with so much experience sharing their experiences is that it's really making it clear to me how determining or creating your identity is not a momentary process. It's not this one climb up the mountain. You know, it's not you read the book Calling Up and you come out and you've got clearly got your identity, you know, or reading some other book like that. I think those things can be helpful and supplement us on the journey. But so much of it is your experience through coaching helps to shape that identity. And what I mean by that is you look at the example of Boomer, like so much of his behaviors, like his willingness to get out there and do all the things that they were going to ask of their players, you know, like, and that helped to shape that identity. I think that was really, really brilliant. As well as TJ, one of the big things I take away from, you know, what TJ does is the simplicity of language. I mean, he chose two rhyming words, but then he allows his players to really, you know, bring forth the behaviors of what that looks like for them. And obviously it influences his own behaviors as a coach and some of the standards I'm sure that they carry on from year to year in that program. But what was really cool is he's allowing his players to be a part of that process. And that was really, really special as well.
Well, JP, one common thread that you get in each of these three answers is that there's a simplicity to the definition of their identity. You know, TJ over the course of time has boiled it down to two words, as you mentioned. Boomer has boiled it down to love, joy, toughness. You know, Will, if you asked him, what are you about at the core of your program? It's others-centered, right? And I think one of the challenges for coaches, you know, when you start this process is you might start from a list of brainstorming values and brainstorming things, characteristics that you'd like your program to be known for. That list could be 15, 20, 25 words when you start. You might have some phrases that you like. You might have some mottos that you saw on a t-shirt, you know. And so how do you take all of that and boil it down into, you know, three words at the most, you know, or a one phrase or two phrases that are, this is who we are. And even though it's challenging, it's worth it. Because here's the thing about that simple phrase or those three little words is that it becomes invitational as well. Like if I want to invite parents into the program and say, we want you to participate in the culture, I have to be able to communicate that in a way that's really simple and then help them to understand what does that look like from a parent perspective. It's the same thing when you're onboarding freshmen, right? Like you need it to be as easy and digestible as possible. So it fits on a t-shirt, so it fits into a hashtag, so that's easy for outsiders, even those that aren't part of your culture, to understand.
You're spot on when it comes to the importance of the simplicity in language. I remember years ago, I had a principal in the mentorship program, and I was doing a visit with and spending time with him at his school. And we were walking down the halls of the school, and we were talking about the culture, you know, the culture of the school and where it needed to grow. But we were trying to figure out where they were, you know, and if people really knew what it was about. And so I remember he stopped on three different occasions, three different students and asked, you know, what's this school about? What's our school motto? And all three times, these high school kids, and it was at a Catholic high school in Pennsylvania, all three times they nailed it. They said, ad summum bonum, which is Latin for the highest good. And he says, well, what's that mean to you? And he's just like, everything that we do here is faith-centered. Everything that we do here is faith-centered, whether it's sports, whether it's, you know, whether it's in the classroom, you know, the service projects that we do. And that just really resonated with me as a school culture that was able to be defined in three words, but then it was so simple. Everyone understood what it meant and knew that. And I think the opposite happens. I think a lot of time in my experiences with coaches, I look down and say, okay, you know, when it comes to that program identity, you know, they might be communicating it in four words, six words, you know, whatever it be. And if you go up to those players and you ask them, hey, what's this program about? You know, they don't know how to articulate that. You'll get a lot of different responses. And so the power of simplicity in language is, yes, it helps it to be memorable. So you have this aspirational identity, but it's also in some ways inspirational and instructional. But if we don't remember, you know, what those words or phrases are, then it's really never going to inspire, and it's never really going to be in a place where it can help us to instruct.
JP, I think that's a great example. And here's the other bit that I love about that is that the principal asked the student the question, what does that mean to you? And I don't think that he's probably fishing for, tell me what I'm thinking, tell me why it's important to me, the principal, the leader. It's really, what does that mean to you as a student? You know, what does it mean to you as a player, right? And I think that brings us to the second half of our conversation this week, which is how do you incorporate player inputs or player influence into the shaping of this identity so that it isn't just dictated from on high or coach led entirely? Like, there has to be some give and take between the coach and the player for players to have ownership over it, because ultimately we all want to identify ourselves by whatever that identity is. And so we pose that question to our panel of experts here this week, just asking them, how do you balance the influence and the input of players with the personal vision of the coach? We'll start once again with Boomer Roberts.
At the college level, you have an advantage because you can recruit to it. I was on the phone with a really good junior college the other day, and they were asking about a specific kid and that we did not recruit, and they asked why. And I told them, you know, this was last year, but I went to a gym, and sometimes I wear my Purdue Northwest stuff and I rock it and I sit center court and want people to know that our presence is there and we're recruiting. And sometimes I just wear, you know, a black hoodie or whatever and go up and sit in the bleachers so no one knows I'm there. And talented, long, athletic, guards the ball, shoots the ball, pretty good feel, like he's going to be a really good player. Was not tough mentally and physically, didn't compete his tail off, didn't have great joy with his teammates. You could tell there's some selfishness, and that might be an alternative example. But for us, like, we won't recruit you if you don't love hoops and you don't love your teammates, because I just don't, you know, that last question right there, it says, do life with, can we do life with these guys? We're on bus rides. They're at our house eating dinner. They're hanging out with my kids and my wife and with each other so much that we want guys that we can do life with. So we want dudes that love each other, that love basketball, that bring joy. And so we can recruit to that. And then when they're there, I understand that life is about growth, right? Like, no one's going to come fully ready for what this culture embodies, but we are specific with it. We talk about it. We meet about it. We give open forums to just dive into life together. We emphasize certain things in practice every single day. And so it becomes a habit. Once you do something enough, it becomes a habit. And all of a sudden, man, everybody's going the same direction with love, joy, and toughness.
Now, this process of involving player input into the casting of this vision and identity is something that often evolves over time, as we'll hear from Mike Avery.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten much better at as a coach, is I'm far more collaborative now than I was when I first started. You know, I used to think that leadership meant just directing. You know, I would try and joystick every move, every pass, every decision, because I thought I had a very clear picture of what it should look like. I thought I was right, and I thought they should follow that. And what I've learned, at least for me over time, is that leadership really isn't that direction. It's leadership is more guidance. I'm just trying to guide them. And I'm trying to steer them into choices and decisions on the field and choices and decisions off the field. And also, I'm far more willing to take on some of what they're telling me as well, and consider some of their, you know, I tell them all the time, listen, it's not me coaching you. Like, we're in this thing together. All of us have a different role to play, maybe. And sometimes I've got to stand up in front of the group because that's the role that I'm playing. But I want to know what they're seeing on the field. I want to know what they're feeling on the field. I want to know, you know, because my perspective is actually quite limited from the sideline. I mean, they're right there in the middle of it. And so I want to create a dialogue, and then finding that balance between where you're not letting the team coach itself and you're still in charge of it, is kind of a tricky balance. And that's where I think as kind of a more mature, I'm going to call it coach. You call me an old coach. I'm going to call it a more mature veteran coach. I feel like I'm getting better at that.
When we posed this question to Will Ray, he had an interesting perspective tying it into the customs and the rituals that have developed over his 17 years at Northridge that has changed the complexion of that identity depending on the team.
You know, I talk to our players a lot about the different traditions and customs and even the standards in our program. And I tell them, I said, look, guys, just so you know that many of these customs and traditions and even standards are a result of your older brothers in this program that have gone before you, you know, that they've either established, the, you know, a certain you know, way of, you know, ending practice or a certain way that guys interact in a meeting or whatever. And then we see that it's a good thing for our program. And then we adopt it as part of our culture. So the players have played a very significant role in that regard. Also, I think, Nate, in taking ownership of our program, that's one of the things that I really try to impart on every new senior class is that, you know, as a senior in our program, it's your job to make sure that you identify for the younger members of the program who we are and who we're not, right? And most of that takes place when I'm not, you know, when I'm not around or none of the coaches are present. And to me, that's the real sign of ownership is when the players are able to discern that something a younger player is saying or doing or a group of younger players are saying or doing in the locker room when the coaches aren't there or in the hallway or when the at a student get together outside of school or whatever. If our seniors in particular can stand up and say, look, that's not who we are in the Northridge basketball program, or they can identify, say, hey, keep doing what you're doing because that's what we're about. I think if that happens, then I feel that we're headed in the right direction. So I see our players' roles really in both ways. You know, both ways. One is that they've helped establish many of our traditions and customs, but they also have taken on ownership and responsibility for making sure that that it's carried on when the coaches aren't present.
Now, in TJ's experience, he's going to talk to us a little bit about how his players have taken those two words of gratitude and attitude and kind of run with them on their own.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I really think that defines whether things are working for you or not, whether it's easy to see that gratitude and whether it's easy to see that attitude. So, you know, one of the things I think helping people along, you know, for instance, at the beginning of practice, we often share things that we're grateful for. And we go around and maybe two or three people just kind of celebrate somebody else. I'm grateful for so-and-so's care for me. I'm grateful for so-and-so's effort or hustle. I'm great. We do that. But I think where you know that it's catching is when it's a halftime of a game or it's at the end of the game or a player prompts it before you do, or somebody walks over to somebody on the sideline and says, hey, you know, hey, great job doing this. I appreciate this. And that's where I would say culture really shows up is in the little things. And so where I really saw a great deal of gratitude in this team was small things and big things. You know, for instance, I had several players that made a habit. We didn't ask them to do this, but we had several players. Some did it every day, some did it weekly, but a lot of players coming up to us as coaches and saying, hey, coach, thanks for working hard this week. Coach, thanks for practice. And that wasn't solicited. But what had happened is I saw them doing that to other players, saw that doing that to coaches, and it just kind of trickled throughout our program where even if somebody was thankful in the past, we might not have seen it as much 5-6 years ago or whatever, we now see it happening every day. And so I think the number of times that I saw somebody celebrate or thank a teammate or celebrate or thank us as a coaching staff was probably at an all-time high. And that's where I really saw, you know, the gratitude one come to life.
One of the things that you hear in all of these examples from each of these different coaches when it comes to incorporating players into this process is that at the core, the DNA of the identity is the same. Year in and year out, team to team, the DNA is the same. But one of the metaphors or the analogies that we like to use with this is that, you know, I have DNA that determines that my hair is going to be red. What little there is there is red, or at least it used to be. It's a little more gray now. But nevertheless, from year in and year out, I might choose to manifest that hair differently. So one team might want to wear their hair down. Another team might want to shave it all off. Another team might want to be prim and proper, right? But the hair color remains the same. And in the same way, as you hear TJ and others talk about, attitude and gratitude is the foundation every year. But what the teams do with that, how they run with that, how they manifest that, the characteristics of that year's team, it may change. And I think giving players the freedom to express those values, to express that identity in different ways is really part of the fun.
Well, and you have to give them that freedom because every year it's a different team. You've got new players. Now, like Boomer mentioned, at some levels, you can recruit or sign players that fit that identity as much as possible. One of my favorite tools I've designed for coaches is the talent assessment system, where coaching staffs are able to more objectively assess their players and recruits, but they aren't just assessing their technical, tactical skills or their athleticism. They're assessing their character, and they're using the values of the program so that you're recruiting from your identity. Another thing worth reflecting on is Will Ray's example of tradition. I mean, he's been there 17 years, so I know some coaches might be thinking, well, I've only been at my program 5 or 3 or even 1 year, so I can't do that. Well, I would disagree. One story worth sharing is, you know, I've been fortunate enough to support Angel Eldrick in the last year, who is the Division I head basketball coach at Appalachian State. And they've had an incredible culture turnaround in the last year. But at the same time, due to players graduating and the transfer portal, they've only had 5 returning players with 9 new players coming in. But those 5 players, I mean, they are culture fits and they align with the program identity. Now, the question is, how do they pass on that tradition from last year? Well, for Angel, it's sitting down with those players and continuing the process of defining who they are. And now, this is really an every year thing. It's an important thing to do every season. But after they have defined who they are, now they have to start to communicate that. And in their case, they will literally have team meetings and conversations this offseason where players, returning players, are onboarding the new players to the program.
Now, next week, in the last part of our series here, we're going to talk with our guests again about, once you've identified what you want your identity to be, how does that inform the decision-making process? How does that influence the standards and behaviors that you start to bring out in the culture of your program?
Thanks for listening in to the Coaching Culture Podcast. If this whole process of determining your own coaching philosophy and your program identity, if this is new to you, I would really encourage you to consider attending our retreat in Park City, Utah, August 1st through 4th. I guarantee you that you will leave the retreat with a better understanding of who you are and what you value and the program that you are trying to create. You can learn more in the details of this episode and feel free to reach out to either myself or Nate. Our emails are in the details of this episode as well.